Like
One
now.
of the things I have in my notes is in like, I think it was two episodes ago, the Grand Maester and what's he called? We're talking about, sorry, I've already forgotten. What's the name of the other Maester? Da, 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 trying to find it on the
Orwell.
sheet. Orwell.
Melos
So on that, they were having a conversation where the king was like, where the Grand Maester was like, the king finds comfort in the leeching. It's always served him well before he finds comfort in it. Even though clearly the leeching wasn't helping, was ineffectual, the king still found comfort with it. And in this episode, I think it's the second time Daemon has called Otto a leech. And so now that Viserys is showing signs of perhaps early onset dementia or at least some sort of mental degradation because he called Alicent Emma, he's seeking comfort. Comfort in leeches. He's seeking comfort in familiarity, even if it doesn't cure the disease. The disease is him not being a good king and allowing the realm to fall to disaster. And Otto isn't helping with that disease. He is not curing the disease. He is a leech, but it brings Viserys comfort, and comfort in that familiarity. So, it was just one of those like little, you know, when you see metaphors, and it's like, oh, I must share. Writers are so good.
That's actually quite fair. Yeah, because it's like Otto Hightower. He like it's like Viserys knows that Otto Hightower isn't good,
He
but
knows he doesn't help,
he's a
but
comfortable familiarity of old.
he's a familiarity. He's a toxic familiarity. He reminds him of the good old days of Emma and when the kingdom was stable and the biggest problem he had was people kind of dissing on his brother. Now he's in a situation where everything is a thousand times worse, and the only comfort he has is in this kind of probably slightly mentally degraded nostalgia. I was just one of those like, oh, the writing in this in comparison to Game of Thrones season 8. Oh, so good.
Actually, we were. I would say, like the. I mean, the metaphors in this came pretty thick and fast. They were kind of spelling them out a lot. The one that I thought, like, because like each episode
Yeah,
seems to
well, I
have like
have
a,
pages of notes.
yeah, the like each episode seems to have like a metaphor that they run with, right? Like almost like a theme, and this one is seems to me to be fire is a prison, the sea is freeing. Because of course they I think it's Daemon and Rhaenyra have that conversation where they talk about the Valyrians might have it right with the sea, because even though every strength we have comes from fire, it is also our prison, because without the fire they're fundamentally nothing. And what's quite interesting then is that at the one of the final scenes, we see Laenor Velaryon and Carl, is it?
Yes, Carl spelt with a
Carl with a
Q.
Q. Yeah, Carl Corry, sailing away across the narrow sea, which is of course, you know, yeah, sailing, well, like sailing away, rowing away. The sea is freeing them in that particular way. And of course then I suppose you can sort of link this in with the idea of, well, Aemon One Eye has of course bonded with Lena's dragon and
Vagar.
Vhagar, and does this mean that he is in that prison? Because he considers it like he feels, it seems like, free, right? He says even at the cost of his eye he gained a dragon, something which of course he's always, well, I say always wanted for as long as he's been able to conceive it, for this and the last episode, right? And it's of course one of the biggest, baddest dragons that he could get, so you know, he definitely comes out of this a winner, at least as far as he can tell. But is this a false victory perhaps? I don't know.
Well, I'm beginning to get genuinely frightened of Aemond as a character because I think there's a lot of threads in terms of his personality that came through in this particular episode that I think can foreshadow some seriously dark future activities. So I think he has the most emotional maturity of any of those three kids. The fact that he nearly reached out to Valerians to Jacaerys and Lucerys. there was a moment where they were stood either side of the fire, and he almost reached out, and then the Valyrians, in this case, the Valyrian bastards, pulled away. And he, there was a point where when Aegon was passed out drunk, his reaction was like brother, almost like his brother is the one that calls him on his drunken antics. And equally, Aemon also said, you know, you should do your duty, you should marry Helena. Helena would help propagate the bloodline. You know, I would do that. And all of these kind of signs of emotional sophistication, as well as the fact that he is willing to go after a big scary dragon without fear. And then he came back kind of super powered up. I don't know how much of that was he's now got a dragon, so he's feeling powered up, or how much of that is just to highlight the fact that the Valyrian bastards and the Trueborn Targaryen girls just weren't trained as fighters, while Aemon was trained as a fighter. So that's why he'd take out four versus one. He came through as a powerhouse.
Yeah, and like,
there is a lot of little like threads that he was kind of following through that I think as soon as he's an adult, I think he's a really quite frightening character.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like
More frightening than Aegon.
Probably.
I think Aemon, particularly in this episode, I think Aemon's kind of, I don't know, I'll be interested to see how it goes in the next couple of episodes, but Aemon's given me vibes of being a bit of a clueless clown more than an actual threat. While Aemon seems actually quite threatening.
Yeah, in fact, to be fair, with, hang on, I'm just trying to navigate this family tree here. With Aegon, he seems a little bit like Viserys in that, like, he just wants to chill. Like, he just wants things to go nice and easy and steady the boat. But whilst everyone around him is like playing this game and being manipulative and all that kind of stuff. Well, hello Matt. Welcome Matt to the podcast.
Hey. Oh, hello. Hi. Hello. Matt. How late am I? When did you start?
We only began for like 5-10 minutes. We're good.
Sweet. Okay, cool. Anyway,
we're just talking about the Trueborn Targaryens and how they're all kind of weird.
Yeah, like, see, I was trying to work out, right, which side were like in the right here, because it's like, to be fair, Aemon did not throw the first punch, but did he? But he did sort of like. I don't know.
I mean,
like,
he did go after the birthright of the of Laena's daughters. He went after basically the biggest metaphorical nuke in the Seven Kingdoms, at the exception of the girls who are mourning and therefore couldn't lay claim. So he may not have thrown the first punch in the kid fight, but he definitely, like, he came in having done something big, like,
did push the ball down the hill. I mean, he started.
But like, don't dragons choose their riders rather than vice versa?
Not based on that.
Yeah, I mean, was it really their birthright to claim Vhagar? I mean, that's debatable.
Well, but
it's still sort of, you know, a dick move to do it right, you know, immediately.
And it's not like
after,
he wasn't,
you know,
your mom died. Like, I mean, to be fair as well, he was quite, like, badly bullied. Like, he did seem like people did punch down.
not by Dame and Laena's kids, though.
Yeah.
So, to be fair.
That's fair.
We're talking about the kid fight as well, I just want to bring up that, like, I haven't been spoiled for how the story ends, but he said some very specific things during the kid fight that I would not be shocked if they came back as kind of foreshadowing or prophecy or some equivalent, where he said that he'd feed one of the girls to his dragon, he said to one of the other boys, you'd die screaming in flames like your father. And given that conflict is definitely on the horizon, and there is definitely going to be war with these kids.
No, you think so? That's a bit of a fan theory, isn't it?
I don't know. I mean, I'm just throwing out the crazy fan theories. like, given that is a good probability, I would be actually quite surprised if those two things didn't come true, the I'd feed you to my dragon and you'll burn in flames threats.
Well,
and that's part of the reason why Aemon scares me, is that this show that's so ripe with foreshadowing and allegory basically spells out a lot of its plots, which I'm loving, but also is definitely it's good tension.
I think that's almost certainly true, but also, like, if you know we're talking about a dragon war, someone's going to get burnt alive by a dragon and someone's almost certainly going to get eaten by one. So I would say it's a probability more than anything else, right?
Nice little thing as well is there was, going back to the training session with the kids from the previous episode, there was a point where, oh my gosh, what's his name? The Kingsguard.
Kristen Cole.
Said, use your legs to Aegon when he was instructing him how to fight, particularly when he was on the back. And Aemon used his legs when seemingly he was being taken out by all four other kids. He used his legs and he kicked out.
Right.
It was one of those little things where I was like, oh, that's another little cool
life. Real life application of what they use in training. You know?
Yeah. And again, you could say that when Aemon came to the fight, he was super duper powered up because he'd just got a dragon and was feeling either emotionally or magically like to the max powered. Or it could be literally he's fighting two girls who would have had no battle training at all, and two boys who are young, well, of an age with him, but two boys who have not had the same level of fight training that he has had. So it's, I think, to highlight that differential.
Yeah, but also
definitely
I think it's kind
some
of
the cojones to go after that dragon, though. That's right. That was the biggest dragon. That's the biggest one, right?
Biggest and oldest one. Biggest currently.
Yep. Well, I mean, you know the dragon guide on HBO.com/allthebusiness.
Look at it right now.
Yeah. I think as well what we're seeing here is the sort of the tragedy that, like, these kids wouldn't really be fighting that much if it wasn't for their parents, like, turning them against each other. Or even not even their parents, but, like, even, like, people like Kristen Cole and the rest, right?
Yeah, it's like all the power exists at such a high level. All the power exists, but, like, the kids don't have any power, so it's like all the fighting for them isn't as consequential as the people who actually hold most of the power right now at the top, though they're going
to
be holding
more. Anyone else get
How
to Train Your Dragon vibes during that dragon riding sequence?
Oh yeah, I did.
I always get those vibes when someone rides a dragon for the first time. I totally got it in the Jon Snow season 8 thingy. Was it season 8?
Yeah,
like, that was.
Yeah,
it's, or even so far as a little bit Harry Pottery, to be honest. But you know,
like what was interesting is again going back to I think episode 1. It was the tourney, and they were saying that these kids are green, and you know, how can we expect them to fight nobly because they're going out into the world green and inexperienced. So of course they're going to fight with no honor. And what was interesting about the dichotomy of the dragon ride versus the kids fight is the dragon ride was very innocent. It was playtime almost. It was this kind of miraculous childlike wonder moment, followed immediately by a somewhat unheroic kids fight. And so it's kind of a story of like the loss of innocence. And I think particularly if there was any innocence left, Aemon, like this was the last episode where Aemon could have really built some bridges and actually stopped the division that the parents started. It would have been this episode, and now it's too late, and so going forward, you know, the lines have been set.
Yeah.
But picked up a rock, like Daemon picked up a rock to kill his wife. Just throwing that one out.
Did anybody get hit in the face with the rock? Or did it, like,
Aemon,
not?
It didn't happen because that at the point where he picked up the rock, Jacaris picked up, drew the dagger.
All right.
So the rock wasn't used, but the threat of a rock was used in the same way that Daemon picked up a rock to kill his wife.
These kids have nothing better to do with their time, you know? Your kids are going to get into fights, but why do you provide them with weapons? Like, that's your mistake, you know? Why did you provide them with daggers and rocks?
Why did he have a knife on him? Brought a knife to a rock fight.
Yeah.
Blunt trauma versus one sharp thrust.
Yeah. I mean, how old are those Valar, Jakaris and Lucrees?
I'm assuming they're about 10.
Like, that's, maybe, I suppose so. I have a real hard time pegging their age, because, like, in part, they're like, quite childish, and on the other side, they're, like, quite teenagerish. I thought, when they went to hold the was it Baela and Rhaena Targaryen's hands during the funeral, I thought that was so sweet. Like, so there's like, that was a really well acted like little segment there where one of them like reached out to, is it
I see more interbreeding in the future.
Well, I mean, they're not
more
that related.
Targaryen interbreeding. Yeah, they're cousins.
I mean,
they're not actually, because Varsity.
Yeah.
No, they are. Well, still through Rhaenyra there.
Rhaenyra
and Daemon are
great nephews
cousins,
once removed. Right.
Yeah, something like that.
Actually, in comparison to Targaryen incest, they're pretty good.
I'm just looking at this old family tree here, and it's like, well, they're quite far apart.
Mm-hmm.
Quite far apart, and they
like
don't
cousins,
share.
Right? Awesome.
Yeah. But they would be cousins, but they don't actually share in genetics with Lena.
Great cousins, second cousins.
So that they are
second cousins.
They are
once
great
removed
nephews
or something like
once
that.
Removed because their genetic connection to the Valyrians are through Daemon and Rhaenyra.
That's almost real life, not incest.
My last note on that section was did you guys get the in the last episode? Helena said something like, Aemon will get his dragon, but he'll need to close an eye to get it.
Yeah, brother and I were Code of Hammurabi, you know, like an eye for an eye. The whole idea, like, it's gotta be equal.
So, Helena's got to be a dragon dreamer. There's she's not a dragon dreamer.
Well, yeah, like, she was saying things like reds and the blacks fighting that, you know, and stuff like that. She was, like, basically, she was laying down some pretty straightforward prophetical lingo, right?
Yeah. She predicted that Aemond would have to lose an eye in order to get his dragon in the last episode. And then the one thing I haven't been able to pin down so far that she's done or said is she crushed a spider in this episode.
Was it a spider or a crab? Right? Or was it like a...
some sort of spindly crab or a spider? I don't know what that means, but I'm sure it means something.
She crushed it. I thought she covered it with a shell.
I thought she just trapped it in a shell. I didn't think she killed
it. I thought
it,
she crushed it because there was a crunch noise.
Okay.
Well. We'll do a post-mortem.
On the crab. You'll do a post-mortem on the crab.
Is it? Okay, let's see.
That's all my notes.
Such a like pretty pink... Pretty pink dress, but very large interest in insects. It's like totally opposite the image.
Yeah. That's my notes on the kid fight and the dragon ride.
Sorry, Max.
I was just going to go back to the eye thing in the eye for an eye. So maybe we can talk about that when we talk about Alicent in the whole thing later. So
that
you
was
go
a good
first.
Scene.
Chris.
That was tense.
Yeah,
that was really tense. I see. The thing is, right? I through this whole episode, I felt a degree of unease, which I think was manufactured beautifully. Right, like there was some underlying discomfort, and I think it was all sort of sewn up in things like the soundtrack, the slightly darker tone of it. However,
a lot of ambient noise in the first couple of scenes, but with very little dialogue.
Yeah.
There was a lot of just reactions, and that kind of buzzing unease was fantastic.
Yeah. However, I feel that this would have packed a little bit more of a punch if, in previous episodes, they had like a little bit more comic relief, or a little bit of comic relief at all, right? Like, a, you know, like a Tyrion moment, or a Bronn moment, or, you know, like a, just some bit of levity to break it all up. Like, the one thing about this show, I think it is a little bit dour and serious. And I think, and I think that, like, moments like this, the, you know, these moments would, I think, hit, like, a little bit harder if you had a little bit of light to contrast the day, as light to contrast the night, for example, you know, like,
yeah. I think the only character who's having fun in the whole thing is Daemon.
Hmm.
Yeah.
He has the potential to be a little bit of comic relief. That, you know, it's not like they couldn't sew in some characters there. But
I see what you mean now. You pointed it out.
Yeah, I'm not like the, you know, the first person to notice. I suspect that in season two we might start seeing some of that, because it's I think one of the more, like, widespread, you know, I like the show but type of criticisms, right? Like, it's just, you know, it's very, very good. Like, and I think in many ways it does improve on a lot of the errors that the original Game of Thrones made, even in its earlier series. In earlier series, there was, like, a lot of, like, gratuitous sexual violence that I felt kind of like don't think helped it, to be honest. And I think this, all the violence in it and all the sex in it, is like, has a place, like there's a reason for it, and it makes it feel like it's a...
I will say for this one as well, is like, they are really pushing for the informed consent in this series versus Game of Thrones. I think they've taken that criticism on board, that even though George R.R.'s Game of Thrones had a lot of questionable age gaps and questionable ages of consent when it came to sexual relationships, almost like most of the sexual scenes, particularly like a few key ones, like Daenerys's wedding, if you take out the age issue, which again, you're living in a medieval world where the age of consent is variable and different to our modern standing, the sex scenes in the books were consensual. Like, there was a level of consent to those relationships, and there's a scene, like, again, with Cersei and Jaime, where that sexual scene was also consensual, and then in the adaptation, they took out the consent. So, in this one, even though there is sex scenes, so far, again, I'm not going to push it forever, but so far, all of the sexual scenes have been consensual. And they have done informed consent. They actually had Rhaenyra today being like, I want you. Like, really pushing that relationship with Daemon. And you could pitch it as grooming, or that they've, like, he's been grooming her for many years. Or you could say, well, you know, it's better than Game of Thrones in terms of consent.
Yay. Well, yeah. I mean, but then again, like, it paints Daemon as a possible, like, manipulator, a possible schemer, or conversely, you could sort of argue that actually maybe he's just thinking more on the fly, you know, that kind of stuff is, you know, like, I don't know, debatable, right? Like, it's part of the field of discussion for a show like that. Also, one of the things I think is kind of interesting is that most of the sex scenes seem to be, like, from the women's point of view more. They're like, you see, like, a little bit, like, well, I say from the women's point of view, like, their reaction is the one that's focused. They're the one that it's, like, all about, which I think is kind of interesting. It's something that you don't necessarily see as much of. And, we all know that this is, you know, this show has been done with George R.R. Martin's blessing, because he's, like, much more involved with this than he was in the later season of Game of Thrones. And also, they've got more female directors involved with this as well. So it's like, and
I think they've also listened to a lot of criticism from the Game of Thrones era, because, like, I'd say if you're looking at the female perspective specifically, then I would bring up the example of Sansa's wedding to Ramsay.
Oh God, don't bring that up! I thought we agreed.
Oh Jesus,
that's horrible.
Where, if we're talking about the the gaze of the camera in that particular scene, the focus was not on the female experience and the female attitude to that situation. They focused on Theon, who was basically irrelevant to that particular moment. So I am bringing that in to highlight how much better D is for this aspect of sexual relationships as depicted.
I hope and quite frankly expect nothing in House of the Dragon will be as bad as that. I think that was a genuine low point, and that kind of stuff, and that in particular, is like probably like one of the key reasons I don't recommend Game of Thrones to people as a general rule of thumb.
Yeah.
Because you can't recommend that to someone. That's just bad on so many levels. It was so uncomfortable to watch. And even in times when I like subsequently rewatched it, that's when I skipped the episode. Like, even I find that just so painful to watch on a whole number of levels.
Like, bring it back to Hot D. Like, not only are they focusing on the sexual relationships from the female's perspective, so Rhaenyra has a very progressive sexual attitude. She had her awakening and then has instigated her relationships. But I think they also focus a little bit more on male impotency and that feeling of lack of control, which I think also needs more depiction in media where it has male vulnerability. And I found it interesting in this episode where one of the things that I was concerned about in the last episode was like Rhaenyra and Laena agreed that they were going to try to have offspring. They were going to do their duty. And in this episode, they really, really emphasized that they tried and it didn't work. And then Rhaenyra uses specifically, she says there was no joy in it, which makes me think that Laena was unable to complete whether by his preference or due to impotency. And I think that's a really interesting thing because obviously he's had that issue and Daemon's had that issue. And those are two of the most prolific male characters so far to highlight that issue of the so much pressure to produce heirs. While the women have to go through the process of birthing, men have got this pressure to produce the heirs. And I think that's a really interesting way of looking at the gender debate in this show, which is so heavily, you know, debating the gender debate. Like, that is one of the primary themes, that it's not just, obviously, the women have got the more deadly result, but the men have, it's a very interesting thing because I feel like they didn't explore that at all. Game of Thrones, all the men were manly men who'll just do it all the time, woo. And there's never a question of impotency at all, from what I can remember in Game of Thrones.
No pushing rope in Game of Thrones.
So I find it really interesting that they are doing a more nuanced depiction of the gender debate, given that the broad gender debate of, oh, woman can't do throne, blah, is the big story. But in terms of if you're looking at the more emotional in-depth story, they are actually doing quite a nuanced gender debate that I find really fascinating.
Do
we reckon that Laenor's going to come back? Because as I understand it...
No,
you don't think he is? You think this is a legitimate happy ending, which gay characters don't typically get in the Game of Thrones world, so...
The only reason why I say that is because I have finished the chapters that this is, you know, being adapted from, and it's assumed that he dies at that point, so, and he doesn't come back, so maybe he will, maybe they'll change things, but as far as my knowledge my from the books goes, he actually should have died, so
my one
it is a pleasant surprise that he survived.
And his survivability is his dragon. He is a dragon rider, so if it's the dragon has got to know their rider is dead to choose a new rider, and it's literally the thinking that their rider is dead is enough for them to choose a new rider, then that's fine. Potentially, I think it's Sea Smoke is his dragon.
Yeah, Sea Smoke does get another rider eventually, so they're going to have to deal with that.
So either it's a non-psychic connection, the dragon just is like, my rider abandoned me, I can choose someone else to be my rider, or Laena's going to die off on the coast with his boyfriend having a miraculous time, and then someone else can become his rider and the psychic connection is then broken. And that'll be interesting dragon lore to discover what the actual line in the sand is, whether or not it is a psychic connection between the dragon and the rider, or whether or not the dragon can choose a new rider if their rider has abandoned them. Because as far as I know, no dragon rider has ever abandoned their dragon before without dying. So it might be a very interesting thing for Rhaenyra to experience in the future, where Sea Smoke has refused a rider for potentially one or two many years, and then suddenly Sea Smoke chooses a new rider, and Rhaenyra will know at that point that Laena, despite her effort to save him, has died. And that could be a really interesting moment for them.
Yeah, I really hope, I like that idea. I hope they put that in the show and they focus on that.
Yeah. It could be the case that the dragon thinks they died because everyone else thinks they died. Like, they seem to be aware of, like, things around them.
They are animals. But they definitely are magical, too. So how far does that go is a question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, could be quite interesting. But yeah, although I say this, we talk about it's a possible happy ending. They did kill someone to do this, right? Is it? Do we know who?
This is one of the security guards, right? Wasn't it one of
random
building
guard?
And they just burned him.
Random.
To make him unrecognizable.
Skin tone appropriate male guard.
Red shirt type of.
Yeah.
Is he listed in the other characters?
NPC. I will be interested in the future as well if Rhaenyra needs to call Rhaenys as an ally, and Rhaenys thinks that Rhaenyra is responsible for Laena's death, whether or not she maybe got Laena to write a note or something saying, "Don't worry, Mom, I'm running away with my boyfriend. All's good. You can trust Rhaenyra, she got me out of it. Ha 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 ha, not actually dead." Because otherwise, Rhaenys and Corlys are never going to help Rhaenyra, because there is a reasonable assumption that if Rhaenyra's immediately jumping into bed with Daemon, that she and Daemon were responsible, which they kind of are. I know that they accepted that as part of their conversation, like, they will blame us, and can you imagine what they think we would do if we'd be willing to do this?
Well,
burning a bridge with a potential ally. I'm hoping that she got some, insurance in the form of a letter or a note or something sealed from Laena saying, "Don't worry, Mom, I'm all good. You don't need to worry about me."
That is actually really bad, because, I can't imagine them doing that.
I don't think they have, and I think it's interesting that they're both Rhaenyra and Daemon are buying into the, you know, fire and blood, we're badass Targaryens, we can do what we want, and, you know, fear is power. That's an interesting perspective to have going into a war where you're potentially getting rid of, allies. It's a bit bridge-burny.
A little bit, but at the same time, Rhaenyra and Daemon are still the grandparent or the parents of their only grandchildren, the Valyrians, and we saw how a little bit stubborn Corlys could be when he was having that conversation with Rhaenyra in the episode, episode about how history remembers names, and he's just sort of stubbornly loyal to the idea of that's why he brought it up with Viserys, and I was 2 episodes ago about the surname of his grandkids. So he cares about his legacy, and if he thinks he can get legacy out of helping Rhaenyra, I think he's gonna do that.
That was a very Tywin conversation, talking about the power of legacy. And I found it the irony of that scene where he is saying Rhaenys deserved to be queen because even though she's a woman, she was the next in line.
Mm-hmm.
And yet denying family heritage to Baela and Rhaena, and choosing the bastards over the true-born daughters. Like, the irony of that whole scene, and the fact that Rhaenys at the end of it was just like, "What the fuck, husband, really?" Mm-hmm. Do you understand what you literally just said? What you just said is,
you should have been queen because you were the true-born heir, but my true-born daughters, like granddaughters, shouldn't get the inheritance because it should be a man because legacy matters.
Like, and names are more important than blood, basically.
Yeah.
Irony just got me so bad for that scene. It was just wonderful, like, just absolute irony. Wonderful. Loved it.
Well, from Rhaenyra's kids and Daemon's kids end up getting linked up together, then maybe that's going to solve some of these problems with Rhaenys and Corlys.
So, Lena... How do you pronounce Daemon's wife? Lena?
Lena, I think.
Lena and Lenor. Oh, God, that is just...
That's so close, right? It's like...
Yeah.
So, that's why I'm looking at this hierarchy when you guys are talking, so I know what you're talking about.
I've got it up now. I apologize to the folks at home for my messing up of this, because I've probably made countless mistakes. But Lena, is she older than Lenor?
Yes.
Yes. So she was the firstborn daughter.
By how much? But yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it indicates here on the thing. So yeah, well, I think to be fair, that sort of like that just goes in with Corlys's like philosophy. Names are more important than blood, right? Because if for example they went against tradition, and which they would never do under this circumstance, but Lena and Daemon named their children Valerions rather than Targaryens, whether or not the circumstances would be different.
I mean, that would be the exception.
It would be the exception.
If they chose to keep the Valerian name. But obviously Daemon has higher precedent as a Targaryen and at one point heir. So it's interesting. That is a good argument to make.
Yeah, I think he's just looking at life through history books, right? Like he lives in a house of artifacts, and all of these artifacts, you know, they probably all each have like a little story, and they will probably be remembered for many hundreds of years after he's dead. No one's going to remember like what he looks like or, you know, anything like that, but they will remember his like the items that he, you know, like took from foreign lands and all this kind of stuff.
If we're taking that into account, almost all of the men of that generation have an obsession with history. Viserys makes his miniatures. Daemon buries himself in the history books, and Corlys does his own museum to his own exploits. They're all obsessed with legacy, while the women are actually just getting on with the raising of children and actually producing the legacy. So if we're again bringing up the gender metaphor, all of the men of that generation bury themselves in the past instead of actually trying to protect the future.
Including, of course, Otto Hightower and Hobart Hightower. They're always going on about legacy as well.
Exactly.
And I suppose...
The only person, man in the show that had a little head on his shoulders died. Rest in peace, Sir Lionel Strong.
Lionel Strong.
He was the goat.
Yeah,
I feel like Lena had a head on his shoulders too, but obviously he had to
die
in speech marks. He understood his duty. I will say what was interesting with him for this episode is if we're talking about the difference between Game of Thrones and Hot D, not only is it more I think gender complex, the fact that we have an LGBTQ plus character who is treated with dignity and respect is really nice. And also I don't know whether or not this is just my interpretation, I would like you guys' opinion on this, but there's a lot of statistics about gay men being more likely to be like having depression. I think there's some crazy statistic where like 60% of gay men have some form of depression or some form of emotional disturbance, and I've got the feeling that that's possibly what they were trying to do with this episode with Lena when he was stood in the ocean crying. That his father, he feels completely abandoned by his father. I think his mother understood, but obviously she had no power to stop the romance, like the arranged marriage. He's lost his sister, and I think his sister, although we never see them have a conversation about his sexuality, his sister is of the same generation of him, as him. So I imagine both she and Rhaenyra had a similar attitude towards his sexuality of like, we're the generation where we can understand you do you, like it's absolutely fine. But he's been under so much emotional pressure that the scene where he stood in the ocean, for me, that read as suicidal thought processes, which is why it was such an embarrassment and he had to be called back up. And then the conversation he had with Rhaenyra about, I'm now prepared to do my duty and give up my boyfriend, read to me as that point where someone's saying, don't worry, I'm fine. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Just before having a full-on crisis and burning out. And Rhaenyra had the conversation with Daemon where she said, he's going to be... he's always been unsatisfied and now he'll be worse than useless or something like that. And so I think that he was heavily depressed and that was kind of like the last straw, losing his sister. And that am I completely barking up the wrong tree? That's how I interpreted that. And I haven't heard in any of the fan theories that I've seen from last week anything about why, about that aspect, but that's how I interpreted his character development in this episode. And I wanted your opinion on it to see whether or not I sound completely insane.
Do you think that factored into him wanting to escape and get out of there?
Yeah, I think if she hadn't let him go, I think he might have killed himself.
Well, I mean, I at the time, I interpreted that as just severe mourning. But what I did find interesting about that is Corlys went to Carl and was like, was he, look, go to your patron or something like that, didn't he?
Said,
He seemed desperately embarrassed by him being upset.
I sort of read that a little bit as like, he's not setting a good image for the family. Like, he's being a bit soppy or pathetic. And I think he felt Corlys, you know, like being a pirate of the however many seas they have in Westeros, or Essos or whatever, like, you know, he's like, Corlys is a very, like, he's a macho guy, right? And he probably was quite embarrassed that his son was grief-stricken, to be honest, you know. I mean, but he didn't care about, like, Carl outside of, like, he seemed more like, I suppose, irritated about the infidelity than about the homosexuality, right? Is that, and he just,
well,
he just,
I was like, more going to Lena's emotional place rather than Corlys's, but I think Corlys's anger in that circumstance and the fact that his, if you're saying it's because he's a macho man and feels like men should be macho man even if they're having emotional issues, that again goes to the fact that Lena feels misunderstood and rejected by his father, which again is a very common thing in LGBTQ plus individuals where their parents reject them and they feel neglected. And shame. I think that just highlighted that shame and that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Again, it was just how I interpreted it.
I agree with your interpretation, Jenny, and I think that it's good. And I think that this show has been, it's treated their representation of characters that like that better than Game of Thrones, like with Renly, for example.
Like the amount of diversity, the female perspective, and particularly this respect of an LGBTQ plus individual and not killing the gay yet is a huge step forward in comparison to Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good, yeah. And although to be like, it's kind of interesting as well, like, in that obviously him being gay is a subsequently important plot point. It's not who he is as a character entirely, right? Like, he has other facets to him. He has other sort of like, you know, he wins at the Stepstones, he goes out and drinks a lot.
Dragon Rider.
He contains multitudes.
Yeah.
He contains multitudes, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Rhaenyra even says, like, you are a noble man, and that's a rare thing. Like, I think he's one of the, like, truly good characters, like who really tries. I think I can't think of any other male character in the story that really actually has really, really tried to do the right thing and has actually kind of committed themselves to the right thing. As far as I suppose, Viserys has tried his best.
Oh, Lionel Strong.
Oh yeah, and Lionel. Yeah. Let's just always put yourself like yay for Strong Dad. Mm-hmm. Harwin Strong.
Actually, to be fair, Harwin Strong wasn't like dishonorable.
Yeah, and I will say for Harwin as well, Rhaenyra was in a really, really tricky position. I'm assuming she tried with Lena a couple of times before, you know, they said they'd do their duty and then they'd taste their buffet as they choose or whatever the phrase was.
have some duck.
Dine as they wish. Have some goose. But she was saying, presumably she tried a couple of times, Lena, and then she's got to produce heirs. She has to produce heirs, and clearly it's not working with Lena. So who can she... It's not just choosing a sexy boy. Like, I've seen a couple of people say, why didn't she just sleep with a blonde? If she slept with a blonde, then she would have had blonde children. It would have been fine. But to find a paramour that's trustworthy and willing to keep the secret of producing bastards... Like, that's a limited pool of people that she can have regular interactions with.
Yeah. She also has a type.
She has a type, but she got lucky in that the type was someone who was, like, locationally available and trustworthy.
She likes tough guys.
And he was interested in her since the King's Hunt. Ever since she brought that boar back, he was like, dang, girl, she go kill boar. But, I've seen a lot of people say, why didn't she just sleep with a blonde? It would have been fine. But, like, her choices were limited, and it's lucky that she found a man that she happened to like. But I don't know how... I can't think of another man that we have been introduced to that would actually be able to be trusted as a paramour to keep the secret of the bastards as they were. It would have been ideal if she could choose someone with strong, like, weak genetics, so they would have, you know, got the Targaryen hair.
Well, you'd be looking at basically
someone like Lena.
They could have picked up some guy at a brothel and then cut his tongue out afterwards. To be fair, if they wanted to be committed to it.
Yeah, but that's not her type. That's she's got a even when she was doing this, there was the suitor episode. Was that like episode 3 or something, where you had the Blackwoods and the
she was more into the bad boys.
Yeah, so
she ended it early. She ended the whole tour early, right? Because she was just sick of it.
Yeah, but she was more into the bully than into the good and noble. I'd say she has the type, but also she has a type, and she had very limited access and very limited people she could trust.
And blonde hair is not common. Like in reality, you generally see that kind of hair on highborn people, right? Like when they do the people in the, you know, the commoners in the streets type of shots, you don't see that many glaring blondes, right? Yeah,
it's I think it traded of the Valyrians or the Lannisters are blonde too, so.
And I will say, you could say she goes to a brothel, bangs a guy, and then has his tongue cut out or murders him. But she's watched 24/7. How it would have been quite a challenge to sneak a male courtesan into her quarters and or for her to sneak out. And then from what we've seen so far in the series, ironically, she's not that Targaryen... aggressive. She killed a boar in defense, and she didn't kill the hart, and she has spared Lena, which I suppose is also a silver-haired kingly being that she spared. She could have killed, but she spared. So when we're talking about her as a character, she talks a good game in terms of fire and blood, and I'm sure she will defend her house and her family until the last second. But she is our protagonist. She was the first character we saw on screen at the beginning of Hot D main
timeline. Mm-hmm. And so far, she has not actively made a decision that makes her genuinely villainous, unlike Alicent. Alicent has made continuous decisions, which has put her in a dark light. But so far, Rhaenyra doesn't seem like the type to wantonly cut out a tongue of a man that she's just fucked for the sake of a child. Like, that doesn't seem to be in keeping with the character as presented thus far. Now, it might change.
You think Daemon might change her?
I think Daemon and her are in a recipe to make something very fiery. I think they could be bring out the worst side of each other that they could possibly be, and they're going to be super toxic.
Maybe, but I don't know if Daemon's like that bad of a dude. I think we see the worst of him in the show, but like
episode one. Yeah.
With Laena, I think he says he's an edgelord, right? Like, he says things like he, I think, and
both
he likes
them talk a good game, but yeah, neither like of them that actually, they're edgy.
Yeah, Daemon likes drama. I like how he was laughing at the funeral and how he was chilling.
He's like chuckling.
Yeah, like and like how he's like leaning up against the wall with that sort of like that big two sides argument thing. Like Daemon, just like he's a bit Joker brain, right? Like, he's a little bit like that. Yeah. But like, also like, but I don't think he's inherently like a bad dude. Like, when him and Laena were in Pentos, they seemed chill and comfortable and not at all toxic.
Yeah, and he tried. And equally, like, if we're talking about the quality of Daemon's character, he didn't have sex with Rhaenyra. He could have done, and he didn't.
But also, he wasn't there was back and forth as well. Like, there was,
and she wanted it.
Yeah. So, like, yeah. Like, I mean, I think he flirts with the line of morality, but I don't I don't think his intention is. Like, have we seen a point? Like, I think the worst thing he's done is probably like kill that guy for Laenor.
Yeah, or well, dismember those thieves.
And of course, kill his wife. Right, kill his wife.
Killed Rhea. Yeah, I was like, that's probably the worst thing that he's done. Like, he made the horse fall on her and abandoned it.
Abandoned
her. He took her out. Right.
I think he's ambitious and he's morally grey. But when you compare the Targaryens to the Hightowers.
Oh, Jenny, you've just called a man that's killed his wife morally grey. I know I just did before you just then, but like,
I mean,
that's bad.
In the realm of the show, he's morally grey in comparison to some other characters. Where Alicent was like, bring me the eye of that child. This episode, like,
she's the one that drew the dagger too on Rhaenyra and actually sliced her, right?
Like, wow, that scene was awesome.
Yeah, right. She says what did she say to Rhaenyra? Like, she said that she was making it all about her still, or something.
I
feel like Rhaenyra sort of like
pretty feet or something, like proper like bitchy girl talk.
What, Max?
Rhaenyra sort of like goaded her into it. Like she could have probably stopped her from stabbing her, but she let her do it to make everyone see how that she was mad or think that she was mad.
Yeah, I think that was smart. Like obviously she didn't want to incite Alicent to drawing a dagger, but letting her actually get the violence was smart to give her the setup for the Mad Queen. Very kind of setting her up to look like a Cersei Lannister type.
And Alicent's also going to keep Laerys around too.
Actually, it's funny you should say that, because I was thinking this on the rewatch, that I'm getting substantial Cersei Lannister vibes from Alicent, even to the point where like Alicent's the way she is because other people pushed her into being the way she is. Right? She was like groomed for being a Cersei, but also. Yeah. I'm also getting Qyburn vibes from Laerys now at this point. We got this Cersei Qyburn dynamic going on that I kind of feel, which is interesting. I like that, you know.
Yeah, well, if you push, like, if you were to set up Alicent and Cersei next to each other, fathers who are Hand of the King, fathers who are obsessed with legacy, getting pushed into the bed of a king who was in love with another woman previously who died. Like the standing, like all of those things
match up perfectly. And there was even some echoes, and like
they're being succession in bastard paternity and
The whole scene reminds me of what was the episode in season one of Game of Thrones? There was the episode on the King's Road, with the kids fighting and the Arya versus Joffrey sequence and all of that jazz, which was just this episode was a perfect echo of that, where the queen was pleading to the king to do justice against kids, and the kids were fighting. It was like there were so many parallels, it's, you know, not even worth tallying up. It was just a poetry in terms of the echo.
Yeah,
it's like all that angst and tension gets like channeled into the kids.
Yeah, exactly, and it makes
it releases it through the kids.
And so it many characters.
It makes me see in that comparison, Jenny, that how much even. How bad of a King Viserys is, he's still better than Robert was in that episode.
I mean, at the point where he's at in terms of he was saying, you know, your king commands it, that was also an echo of Robert, where, you know, I feel like they both handled the situation very badly and both had the kids shouting over them and not being able to do anything, and the wives going away unsatisfied and the kids going away hurt. And it's going to pull into more conflict in the long run. It was brilliant.
Yeah. Now, because up until now, we've been talking about Larys as if he was Littlefinger. But I am definitely thinking of him more as a Qyburn, where, like, he, even though he's like technically Lord of Harrenhal now, he has like no like children and seeming no plans for children. He is anti-legacy in that way, in a similar way to which Qyburn kind of was. Like, he wasn't necessarily anti-legacy. His goal is to
mess with others' legacies.
Yeah, basically.
I will say though, with Larys, I don't know whether or not I was the only one who, again, I don't know whether or not I'm just nuts in my reading of some of these sequences, but the way that he was kind of obsessing over Alicent gave me Littlefinger and Catelyn vibes. So I don't know whether or not he is planning on making a legacy somehow with or through Alicent, not necessarily sexually, but using her, like the constant, like, you will reward me type mentality, and the fact that he was staring at her through the funeral enough that Kristen was like, he's staring at you, why is he staring at you? Like, and she said, your interest has been noted or something on the boat at the end. I don't know whether or not, like, that gave me Peter Baelish perving on Catelyn and Sansa vibes, which makes me feel more kind of Baelish Littlefinger vibes. Maybe a little bit of Qyburn in there, but I'm like, there's been the, if you combine Varys and Littlefinger, you get Larys.
Yeah. But like, Varys was good. Varys is more like Lionel Strong, isn't he?
We hope. I mean, he's a complex character and died before we got to really know him, ironically.
To be honest, I think the situation is Lionel Strong just was not that interesting. I think he just genuinely he was a job's worth in a good way. You know, he just did his job and things were like all right, and then he died. You know, not much to say, really. Like, probably the best Hand of the Kings are probably the most unremarkable, right?
I was wondering what you think of Otto's influence still on Alicent, because there was that one conversation that he had, and he's still speaking as if, like, she's on the same team as him. Because I know that he talked about, like, they just got the dragon on their side. But I'm wondering if he's still manipulating Alicent a lot, because it seems like...
I'll be interested to see whether or not Alicent finally realizes how much he's manipulating her.
Yeah,
I've got the feeling, in terms of Alicent's character progression towards a more devious, murderous side of her, I think at some point she's going to realize what Otto has pushed her towards this whole time, and she might use Larys to do some violence to Otto, potentially. Well, she potentially is going to use him to do violence against Rhaenyra, but I think there is going to be a point where she matures enough to realize that Otto isn't good for her and hasn't been good for her and has been selfish this whole time. And I don't know whether or not she might use Laris to do that.
Wow. Maybe. Interesting.
Maybe. Because he's got nothing else that he's nothing else is really going on for him. He's sort of just available.
Well, I suspect that Alicent will not clock into this, and I think she'll become her father.
I found, again, in terms of parallels forward and backwards through the story, I found it interesting that Rhaenyra said she didn't believe that Alicent was capable of cold-blooded murder. And then clearly in the end of this episode, it's quite clear that Alicent is capable of cold-blooded murder. Yes, she didn't actually commit the murder at Harrenhal and kill the Strongs. She was connected to it, but didn't do the deed. But at this point in the story, she is perfectly capable. And exactly the same parallel to Rhaenyra not having sex with Daemon, and Alicent standing up for her and saying, I don't believe she had sex with Daemon. But at the same time, Rhaenyra actually being guilty and capable of having sex with Daemon. And I think if we're talking about series-long allegories, not just the allegory of the episode, I think there's a really good contender for the morality of violence versus the morality of sex. The morality of sex is constantly put down as an amoral, terrible thing, while violence is always put on a pedestal as a necessary evil.
Yeah.
And I think that theme is one of the ones that's come through the most, where Rhaenyra is absolutely run through the mill for the concept of a lack of chastity, while the aspect of absolute violence and, you know, murder, asking for a child's eye, that is not considered nearly as bad as a sin as having sex. And I found those two, the parallels of that episode, where at the beginning of the episode, one of the girls is saying, I don't believe the other one is capable of it, but the other one has already committed the crime as such, but in a not quite the direct version of the rumour. And then at the end of the episode, it's proven that they are perfectly capable of following that threat.
Yeah, it's the misjudgment for sure, yeah.
Sorry, that was a very long-winded metaphor. I'm going to stop talking. Tell me to shut up.
No, it's, to be fair, you've got a lot of, you've got catching up to do. although, to be fair, I feel like we've covered almost every ounce of this episode now.
I've still got pages.
Oh. All right, go on. What's,
Okay, I'll go super quick. And the beach that Daemon and Rhaenyra had sex on, not particularly a safe place to canoodle with your uncle anyway, but also it's the same beach that she and Laena agreed to get married on, which I thought was a nice parallel.
Wow. Was it the same beach where Stannis Baratheon killed all those people? Driftmark.
That would have been at Storm's End, not at Driftmark.
No, that Dragon's thingy.
Would that be in Dragon's Reach? It wasn't Driftmark, because I don't think Driftmark was featured at all in... Yeah, I don't think Driftmark was featured at all in Game of Thrones. We've already done that one. I found it... So, one of the things that
Sorry, I got to interrupt, because I just caught this, right? I'm just scanning through the episode now. When she's having a chat with Daemon in Valyrian, she says something like, I completely scanned past it now and I caught it on subtitle, I cannot face the Greens alone. So it's like, they this is the first time that I've seen, correct me if I'm wrong, where they're given a name, where that side... with that group of people. We've seen it alluded to when in the last episode where the kids were wearing their particular colours when they were training in the courtyard and all that kind of stuff. But and we only hear it in Valyrian. We don't hear it in English or whatever they're speaking when they're speaking in English. But it's right at the end of the episode, after, I believe, the marriage. After the marriage and before the elaborate murder setup. They're talking about basically the war to come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jenny, I cut you off.
No worries.
Sorry, like, honestly, cut me off more often because I feel like I've talked way too much because I'm excited.
It's a good show.
I found it interesting in the scene with the kids, the callback to the King's Road scene where the kids are fighting and trying to calm things down, and then we had the knife situation. So Alicent said, protect me. Alicent said, you're sworn to me, to Christian. It's interesting that specifically Christian is sworn to Alicent because he should be the King's Guard, which means that he's sworn to all of the kings, which is making me think that in the episode where Rhaemyra got married and Christian went into the Kingswood, not the Kingswood, into the Godswood, and was thinking about committing suicide to save him from the shame of having sex with Rhaemyra, and then Alicent appeared in green in front of him and saved him from committing suicide. I think at that point he might have made some sort of pledge to her in order for her not to have him sent to the wall or killed or gelded. And so I think her calling out to him, you are sworn to me, like, you must take this child's eye right now. And his response was, I'm sworn to protect you because he's in public. I don't know whether or not there's an additional swear, like, pledge that he's made to her.
Yeah, there might be.
Because she went specifically to him to do some dirty business for her, and he refused, which I think might be the reason why in the last scene he was like, if I need some dirty business done, I can't rely on Kristen. I've got to rely on Laris.
She's got multiple hands to do dirty business.
Yeah, lots of...
Maybe Laris will be the under the cover dirty business, and Kristen will be like the image in public more.
Stuff. Yeah, I did find it interesting that he did refuse to do her dirty business in this particular circumstance.
Well, yeah, because you can't cut out a kid's eye in the middle of the court. really, under any circumstances, especially if the king is telling you to not do it.
Like, yeah, but I found it interesting that he's the one that broke
up the whole. He broke up the whole fight too, right? He's the one that screamed at everybody.
It doesn't really matter how pledged he is to Alicent. If the king says stop, pretty much got to stop, right?
Yeah. But I still find it interesting that Alicent tried. She thought brazen, that Christian would be loyal to her in that particular circumstance.
And when he wasn't, she tried to do it herself.
Yeah. Which makes me think that she thinks she has more power over him than she does. But I don't know whether or not that means something extra.
It could be, but also she kind of lost her temper. Like, she wasn't thinking things through.
Yes. And so talking of which, the fact that she wasn't thinking things through, her father's like, go to the king and, like, plead that you were distressed over the loss of your son's eye. So he was telling her to plead in a womanly way, basically, for forgiveness, because what can the king do?
While she was vulnerable, he was telling her what to do.
It was also, like, the fact that Otto fully understands that Viserys has no power anymore. The fact that, like, Alicent can go to him and be like, sorry, I asked for your grandson to have his eye cut out. I was just really emotional. And,
you know, us women with our emotions.
Yeah, us women with our hormones.
Vulnerability is weakness.
Yeah.
So I think that was just like a bit of masks slipping, where she was like, you know, Kristen, you're my guy. But also when I think it was like episode one or two or something. Yeah, it's like, you owe me. When Rhaenyra was choosing Kristen out of the lineup of potential Kingsguard recruits, Rhaenyra was making the decision because that was going to be the Kingsguard that protects Rhaenyra. So when Alicent came across Kristen in the Godswood, I think she was like, she had a strategy hat on, and she was like, you know what? If I can use my influence to restore Kristen's honor, then he'll be in my pocket. Like, he will be a completely loyal Kingsguard.
Yeah.
So
yeah, he'll own me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Basically, that's where I think it happened, is that at the point where she saved him from shame, she basically thinks that she has absolute loyalty from him, but when his loyalty was tested in this episode, he did actually do the noble thing and not cut out the child's eye. I don't know. I just found it interesting. I feel like it would anyway. It was just one of those things that I noticed.
Well, you say do the noble thing. Do the incredibly obvious and sensible and non-suicidal thing.
There's the obedient thing, and then there's the compliant and obedient thing, and then there's the moral.
Yeah, yeah, like, because, well, like, what would
the kind thing.
I think Kristen was just like, no, I'm not going to do that. That would just be stupid. Like,
I don't want to be like one of these kids fighting each other.
And also, like, that. I mean, I think he goes, I think he thinks about it.
Oh,
like,
yeah, he probably thinks about it, of course.
He's like, oh, yeah, nah.
But he's like, I'm not going to lower myself down to the level of these kids and their squabble.
Mm. Although, it's hard to keep up when things get a bit raucous. People start holding each other back. And who does Kristen hold back? It's Damon, right?
Damon holds Kristen back, and Allison reaches for the dagger. So I don't know whether or not Kristen was jumping to Allison's defense or jumping to Rhaemyra's defense.
Oh, yeah.
But it's interesting that at the point where violence occurs, Kristen rushes in and Damon stops him. Which, given that at Rhaemyra's wedding, obviously there was the violence against Joffrey that was by Kristen. I wouldn't have put it past him during the scuffle, if he'd gotten close, to have accidentally allowed Alicent to kill Rhaemyra. Like, I wouldn't have put him past him in that kerfuffle to have done that, and Daemon stopped him. I don't know whether or not that would have been possible, but taking advantage of violence in a crowd seems like the sort of thing that would be in Christian's ballpark. And he obviously does not like Rhaemyra. And it was almost a perfect situation where if he was, you know, pulling the queen back from stabbing Rhaemyra, oh no, he let it slip, the dagger's fallen into Rhaemyra's side, oh no! But Daemon held him back. And it's interesting that Daemon went for Christian rather than, like, all the other Kingsguard rushed in and tried to stop the combat, but Daemon stopped Christian from getting into that combat.
Mm.
Which,
yeah, he could turn
that's
the tide.
Interesting to me.
So you think he would have defended Alicent?
I think he would have defended Alicent, as he has that connection.
Why doesn't he like Rhaenyra? He doesn't like Rhaenyra because he actually wanted to, like, run away.
And she refused him.
Remember?
And also, he had the whole thing where he, like, he felt like
Would he have stopped both of them?
And Rhaemyra seduced him and corrupted his white cloak and spoiled his virtue.
Yeah. Or maybe he would have stopped him from fighting.
Flaunt, I don't know. Loki of the rules. I don't know.
Because he could have loyalties to both sides. I don't know if he would stop them or which side he would.
I think. Well,
I think
to
choose Alicent.
Who would Kristen?
Kristen, yeah.
Oh yeah, 10 out of 10. Yeah, like, he hates Rhaenyra, but also, but with Daemon, like, I mean, in that moment, Daemon's like, oh, Kristen is a nut job, so better hold him back a little bit, like, just on that impulse alone, because, you know, he's clearly, like, unhinged.
Why did he beat the other guy up? The other,
yeah, like, he Joffrey Lonmouth. He killed him.
He beat up Joffrey because Joffrey was like, hey, I totally know you slept with the queen.
Oh, right.
Also,
I know your secret.
I'm totally sleeping with Laena. And I think part of, like, the majority of the reason why Kristen killed Joffrey was because it sounded like a threat. It sounded like, I know you slept
I'm
with the queen. I can totally use your secret
against you.
But I also wouldn't put it past him in the same way that Kristen and Allison are both very into the lore of the Seven. That Joffrey saying, I know your secret, you totally destroyed your honor by sleeping with a princess as a member of the Kingsguard. Also, I'm openly gay and totally sleeping with her future husband. I wouldn't put it past it to be some of that violence, bit of that violence to be, you are clearly against the lore of the Seven and also an unvirtuous man.
I reckon, like, for me, the way I interpreted it was that it was like, so Joffrey Lonmouth, to me, right, was like, he was being, there was a degree of levity on his part. He was like, hey, we're in the secret club, we're banging the important people, isn't it naughty, isn't it nice, hey, 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 hey. And
Crispin took it as a, you're threatening my life.
Well, I think Kristen was embarrassed, quite frankly, because Kristen's got this hard on for honor, and it's like, and he doesn't want to be this bit on the side. He considers it to be a tremendous embarrassment. So this idea that
he doesn't
like
want to be a whore,
sneaking around like a naughty little boy, I think he hates that I think he's dreadfully embarrassed about it, and I think he just lost his. And I think he is like literally like I don't know, like I get like weird incel vibes from him, right? Like he can't,
yeah,
he can't handle his emotions in the slightest, right? Yeah. Not like
he acts
like,
into his emotions very easily.
It was like that thing that was it Stacey posted the other day about be like Gendry.
Yeah, I saw that. Be like Gendry.
Yeah.
It's like, have sex with a highborn girl, fall in love with her, propose to marry her. She says no. Okay, carry on with your life. And be
deal disappointed, handle like a man, get over it, or feel betrayed, get angry, and become her enemy. It's like, which path are you going to go down?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, right. be Gendry. Be Gendry every single time.
Yeah. Aww.
Back into your feelings. You have anything else Gendry. on your list?
I mean,
Jenny?
To be fair, Gendry had it all right in the end. You know, he got Storm's End. That's a pretty major win, really. Especially considering he was an apprentice blacksmith. He in his world,
he was an apprentice blacksmith bastard.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, his aspiration was to not be an actual normal blacksmith. maybe if things went extra well, he might even have his own blacksmith little shop on the sheet of steel. What? No, he's got all of the blacksmiths. He's got blacksmiths working for him. So yeah,
he can franchise.
Exactly. So yeah. Yeah.
Any other highlights, Jenny, on your?
Okay, I'm nearly done. I swear. So one of the things I've heard was like, why did they change Lena's death from just death in childbirth to death by dragonfire? And I think that was so they could have something different from Emma's death. So it wasn't just death in childbirth, but also then you have the parallels between Daemon's spouse dying in fire and Rhaenyra's love dying in fire. So it was just it was a nice match-up, parallel, poetry, all that jazz.
But also, one thing I noticed is when we talk about parallels, I noticed a substantial contrast between Lena's death, where she realized, or not realized, but when it was became known that the childbirth was going to kill them both, basically, she it wasn't like Daemon didn't basically say he didn't make the decision, like he didn't even make the decision,
she had agency,
right?
Over it.
Yeah, Lena had the agency, and the she choice. Went out yeah she decided she went out on her terms. So I think, in contrast to Emma, who was like, she basically died out of duty, right? Like it was her duty to provide heirs. She died in childbirth. Therefore, like she basically died on the job, right? Like that, which is tragic. And then you got Lena, where she is also in a tragic circumstance, but she's there because she chose to be, right? That was a marriage of love.
She got to self-actuate on her death.
There was more of a humane conversation about it as well. Like the surgeon was like, I've reached the limits of my expertise. He wasn't, want to give a go at cutting the baby out? We'll lose your wife, but you might get a kid out of it. You know, like it was
that
generally
actually matches up with. Another one of my notes is that in the last episode at Rhaenyra's birth, there was no maester. There was no representation of a male maester or a maester of Old Town specifically at Rhaenyra's birth of Prince Joffrey, she had just midwives, the midwife who she called a C-word. It was just women, and her birth was fine. It was as it should be. And so I suspect that Rhaenyra does not let maesters attend to her when she has children because of what they did to her mother and also because of the connection to Old Town through Alicent. I think she only ever had women at her birth. And she has successfully had three healthy boys. And presumably she is going to have children with Daemon. So I'd be interested to see whether or not at her future children's births, whether or not she has attendance of maesters, but I'm assuming that she won't. And I also find it interesting that, so the reason why it's on my notes is because I was going to say she never lets a maester attend to her, but a maester did sew up her arm and a maester did attend her wedding to Daemon. So I think a maester is allowed to perform general medicine. A maester was a good witness to have at her wedding to Daemon, that she had an impartial witness. But they do not attend her when she's going through the birthing process.
That's a very acute observation.
How that continues through the show.
Yeah, because it's if you think about it, right? So, like, if you look at the maesters, they're often portrayed as very, like, old men, fuddy-duddy, professory types, right? Which probably do not, at least in the context of the Game of Thrones, House of Dragon World, they probably don't make the, like, their knowledge, like, these guys are, like, celibate and don't hang around with women for the entirety of their professional career.
How much advice can they actually provide?
Yeah, like, how good of midwives can they, like, even be?
There is a absolutely precedented set of historical references of men having no fucking idea about the birthing process and making terrible decisions about the birthing process and the physical health, both pre and postpartum. Like, there is a plethora of evidence. So, like, the whole thing about, like, you shouldn't wear heels if you're pregnant because it causes your womb to migrate. Like, that's... Like, the only way you would think that would be true is if you'd only had a conversation with a woman who, or like, had any anatomical knowledge of a woman in the dissection room. That's it.
Yeah.
These men who have been attending these births, which we have seen fail, specifically Emma's and Lena's, were men, while the women in that situation, there were female attendants during that thing. And they were quiet and they were having no input at all, except for the birth of Rhaenyra's children, where, yes, she called them a C-word, but they were competent, they did the right things, and she had a healthy child. They dealt with the more graphic, like, afterbirth and the cutting of the cord, but were able to get her up and moving instantly. Yes, she was in a lot of pain.
I also read in history, quick note, that the reason that women knew more about the birthing process was because they had at-home births with midwives to start, and then when women migrated to hospitals, the expertise was different. They had no experience with it. Yeah, the doctors had no experience with it, and it also took 20 years for doctors to wash their hands.
The amount of complications from postpartum things because men have no idea, and women who are in the birthing, like, you know, if you go through it, you know how to do it, you pass it on. I found that really interesting that
rather than learning about
a maester sew up her arm, wouldn't let a maester be present at the birth of her children.
God, it's like learning about women's health in a building exclusively full of men. Textbooks written by men. Like,
that's why home births were more popular to start.
I'm starting to see a flaw in this logic here. Yeah,
because women had the expertise because they had the experience.
But also, what is quite interesting is that when Rhaenyra said, "I think I called the midwife a C-word," right? That in and of itself indicates, like, that line is supposed to indicate she didn't say maester, she didn't call the maester or whatever, she called the midwife, whatever, right? Like, that line is supposed to. Jenny, this is good find.
When we're talking about doing a more complex gender story, it's little moments like that where you're like, yes, this is if.
if you compare this to Game of Thrones in terms of the complexity of representation and the complexity of gender issues, rather than being like, women weak, or they super powerful stat man, like, like, this is more interesting to me. Like, the fact that Rhaenyra can kill a boar in self-defense, like, she is competent, she is somewhat sword-trained, she is a dragon rider, but she's also a politician and a mother. Like, all of these things come into play, and it's great.
So one thing that does lead me to down this train of thought is, like you say, Rhaenyra was being sewn up by a maester, but this also could possibly be, right, like, I mean, Rhaenyra, who is obviously a woman of agency, she can choose midwives or maesters, right? Like, that's her prerogative, right? Because she, you know, like, what I princess, so. You know, she's a princess, right?
Would assume but, so.
Also, but what is interesting is that the maesters under this new Grand Maester Orwell, like, maybe she's a bit more comfortable with them because maybe this guy is like, you know, he's younger, he's got some new ideas, he's a bit more like, well, let's try this washing the hands business. Maybe there's something in it, right? You know?
Maybe, but we haven't seen her attended to by him.
No, but, like, he's the Grand Maester, so presumably, like, his pace, you know, like his philosophy will kind of set the pace of how other maesters operate, perhaps. Or maybe he just represents maybe a, you know, a more enlightened era of maesters rather than Grand Maester Melos, who, I don't know, he just seemed stuck in the past, really, didn't he? So
well, I'll be interested to see if we're going with the metaphor of Viserys kind of regressing to comfort, even if that comfort is not good for him, whether or not, even though he's got this better maester, in the future they might say, he might say, can I have leeching to help me feel better? And the maester will be like, no, we try this other treatment now. And he's like, no, leeching is what I want. Leeching works. I'll be interested to see if they follow that medicine thread backwards again.
That's interesting. What else you got?
What have I got? Okay, I promise I'm so nearly done.
It's okay. It's awesome. I'm having a great time.
So good, yeah.
So I have a question for you guys, because I'd be interested to know your opinion as well. So at the point where they're having the kings trying to sort out the children squabbling, we don't know where Christian was. So Christian was on the night's watch. Like, he was taking the night's guard duty for the evening,
right,
and had no idea what was happening with the kids. He apparently didn't notice the dragon flight when Aemon took the dragon. Apparently he didn't notice that, even though the kids noticed it to be woken up and then go and find Aemon. So Kristen was apparently busy enough, he didn't notice the dragon, he didn't notice that Rhaenyra had gone walkabout, he didn't know that Daemon had gone walkabout. What was he doing and where was he? In the same way, what was Alicent doing? So I think this is the second time Alicent was meant to be somewhere and was otherwise occupied. So I don't know whether or not they were potentially doing something together or doing something separately. I just found it interesting that where were the adults when all these kids were fighting? Because the first adult to come to them was Harrod Westerling, the Kingsguard main guy. And he should have been looking after the king. So he must have... He was on the ball and went to go find the kids. Where was Kristen? Where was... Obviously, we know Rhaenyra was with Daemon. But where was Alicent? And where was Kristen? And, yeah, I'll be interested to know, because I feel like that's the second or third time those characters weren't where they should have been.
Yeah, and no one was it's supervising, been left nobody off was screen. Weren't supervising the kids. Nobody was supervising the kids.
Who was supervising the kids? Because the only person who was supervising the kids was Otto, who dragged Aegon off the steps when he was drunk, told him to go to bed. All of the other adults were doing something else, and the only ones that we know were occupied were Viserys, who was ill and asleep, and Rhaenyra and Daemon, who were fucking.
Well, here on the House of the Dragon character guide, there are only three Kingsguard listed, and one of them's dead. It's Ryan Redwine. So the two is Kristen Cole and Harrod Westerling, right? They're the only two Kingsguards that are named. And I would imagine that Kristen Cole would be basically assigned to Alicent 24/7, right? Like, he is the Alicent queen's...
was like, where were you?
Oh, so maybe he wasn't with Alicent. She was asking, where were you?
Yeah. Anyway, so it was one of those things that I thought might be an interesting thread to follow up in future episodes. Yeah. If those characters disappear again, where are they? What were they doing? Two other little things that I just liked. So Rhaenyra really smartly calling out the bastard question in front of Viserys. So Viserys had to deny and put down the law that they were bastards, and had to get everyone who was there at that council to understand that from the king's perspective, as his, like Daemon said in like episode two, what you say is true, or like the episode where Rhaenyra's chastity was in question. He said, you know, you are the dragon, if what you say is the truth. And it's interesting that even though Viserys was like, you know, this is a heinous lie that these are bastards, his word was clearly not equal to the truth.
So it's like a little bit like the king can say what the truth is, but it's like he's building a house of cards that's going to collapse when he dies. It's like, okay, so as the king decrees that these are legitimate children, the king decrees that Rhaenyra is the next in line to the throne. And it's like, as long as the king's around to like oversee these decrees, all is well. But the second he dies,
he becomes the truth speaker. Yeah.
Like, and if he was a more powerful king, if he was a more respected and, I don't know, healthier king, or more like confident in his reign, maybe his word would be the truth. You know, other Targaryen kings have said this is how it is, and it has been that. Like if what's he called, the Conqueror, were to say, "My bastards, these bastards are my true-born heirs," then that would have been the word. Yeah. But Viserys doesn't have that respect. No one has that, so he can't bypass the obvious truth that Rhaenyra's kids are clearly not true-born.
Yeah. It's like when the status quo truth disappears, who establishes the status quo next? You know, because it can only go back so far if you're alive.
Yeah. I mean, the situation isn't aided by this fear that, and I think this is a great driving force for Alicent, because it's something that Cersei didn't have, is that Alicent is legitimately scared that just by virtue of having male-born heirs that under any other system would be inheriting the throne, her very life and the life of her entire family beneath her are at risk. Like, to her, this is literally... And her father, Otto, has, like, you know, like, he has forced this narrative on her from such a young age. If you don't prepare for power, if you do not undermine Rhaenyra, you're as good as dead. So to her, this is a battle of life and death. And when you've got that in your mind, it's like she has to win. So it's a motivation that goes beyond ambition. It's a motivation that is self-defense, right? And you know, even though we can see the tragedy that in many cases she's basically bringing it upon herself, Rhaenyra probably would not do anything if she didn't feel like she wasn't defending herself. So it's aggression out of fear that if everyone just dropped their swords would be fine.
Yeah.
Everyone just chill, you know, but like,
I mean, that's the default story of Game of Thrones. You win or you die. You got it. If you play, when you die,
this is the game they're playing, and they gotta play it well or die. I mean,
not a democracy. One last point on my list and then I am done, I promise. So the Targaryen wedding ceremony,
interesting.
Super cool in terms of the fact that Daemon probably researched the heck out of that and wanted to do it in the traditional way. So there's a lot of blood sharing.
They were a bit less cautious back in the
cutting days on the lips.
Well, lip cuts. There's some version of the law of Game of Thrones where Targaryens, or specifically dragon riding Targaryens, are immune to disease. So if they have a dragon, they're immune to disease. If they don't have a dragon, then they can be vulnerable to disease. So Viserys doesn't have a dragon, and therefore he's been destroyed by this corruption from the throne that has been making him ill and potentially demented recently.
for years and years and years. While Daemon got doused in the blood of Crab Eater, and Crab Eater seemingly had some sort of disease, potentially, I've seen one, but I think Alt Shift X said he, according to the producers, Crab Feeder had grayscale, and Daemon got covered in his blood and has had no symptoms at all. And both Daemon and Rhaemira are dragon riding Targaryens, and I think the blood sharing rituals involved in their wedding can be a sign that they are potentially immune to disease or to diseases that could be shared by blood if that's part of their wedding ceremony. I think that's just one of the things that kind of made me pinged for me when all of that blood was being sharing. And my last thought, which is for the future, how much danger do you think Rhaemira's bastards are in if she manages to have some trueborn sons with Daemon?
That could be a bad time for them.
In terms of Daemon potentially doing harm to those boys, because
unless Daemon and Rhaenyra's actual kids have some serious DNA genetics problems.
Yes.
You know?
Which, given that Helena and Aegon are due to marry, I think they're more likely to have genetic issues than Rhaenyra and Daemon.
I want to say Daemon would be cool. I suspect Daemon is not as hung up on, like, he's a little bit like Corlys in so far that, or in fact he's not even as bad as Corlys. I don't think Daemon is that obsessed with legacy. In fact, actually, to be fair, Daemon's motivations seem somewhat of a mystery. Like, he seems to be going after Rhaenyra for love.
Well,
am I wrong?
Was it Rhaenyra? Didn't Rhaenyra like say to Daemon too with his with Laena, like, it's a good achievement that I was a loving, joyful relationship. She did tell that to Daemon, right, Rhaenyra?
Yeah, I think it's an achievement that you guys were happy.
Yeah, exactly.
I think she and Laena were functional, but they weren't necessarily happy. I think at least Laena was deeply depressed.
Frustrated and restless, and, you know, she was a dragon rider and she was living the fat cat life in Pentos, right? Like,
yeah.
Sorry, Laenor, not Laena.
Laenor.
I think Laenor was deeply depressed. I think Laena was wanting to have more fat, like, heritage stuff, but was mostly content.
She was. But she thought Daemon would want more, but he was content at Pentos, right? He liked his artifacts and all the stuff he was doing. He didn't want to be...
I don't know if he was content, because she said he didn't sleep and was obsessed with books and didn't go out into Pentos. I think he was trying to be content.
Well, maybe this new Blood Oath Covenant is him getting back into hierarchy again. Yeah.
I think Rhaenyra and Daemon are going to be... very interesting as a power couple.
Unstoppable power couple.
Unstoppable.
It's gonna be really interesting seeing how they impact each other, both with his obsession with Targaryen history and her promise to her father to respect the prophecies, as well as all of the other conflict that's going on. I think their relationship's going to be really interesting to watch now that they're wedded and bedded.
So do you think, you think if Daemon's, like, obsession isn't legacy, what is it? Is it just power?
I mean, who knows?
Well, at the beginning, he seems to indicate, yes, I'm going to be king. But, is that serious? Is that because he's going to marry Rhaenyra? Like, he always planned on marrying Rhaenyra, who would be queen?
I don't know.
Is he playing a long game?
Was he always just fronting? Or was he actually... like, did he have a plan? Or was he just wanting to watch the world burn?
Is he playing a slow ball game?
Does his early episode bravado about, sitting on the Iron Throne and all this talk about being king, maybe it wasn't to do with him being the heir. Maybe it was more to do with him... like marrying Rhaenyra, maybe he was sitting
on the throne when they were still expecting for there to be a Baelon Targaryen.
Mm.
He was st- still fronting for the throne when he was expecting his father to have a legitimate male heir. So I don't know whether or not he always planned on marrying Rhaemyra as the heir, because he was still the heir at that point. He was still the default heir unless Balon happened. Yeah. So I don't know whether or not there was fronting from the beginning. I genuinely don't know with Daemon whether or not it's been a ridiculously long game, in which case he's finally got what he wants, which is a genuine legitimate claim to the throne.
Yeah. He's probably just with own real patient.
Whether or not it was just chaos as a ladder.
Yeah.
It's very, you could almost say that the show almost incentivizes, opens up these false rabbit holes of things like that. But it strikes me that Daemon is not that joined up, that much of a joined up thinker. Like Larys, quite possibly. Otto Hightower, almost certainly. But I think Daemon, in many cases, doesn't know what he wants. He strikes me as the kind of person that might lie to themselves about what they want. I think that he has a broad direction of what he wants. I think he wants
satisfaction. And I don't think he quite realised what it is that satisfies him.
Is he bored rich kid?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, if we're going with the fact that kid. In episode one he wasn't able to have successful sex with, what she called, his whore. And she suggested maybe you want to have sex with a blonde-haired maiden, a silver-haired maiden.
Miseria.
I think he's after the next fix. And even though, ironically, he said to Otto, the leech never stops feeding, no matter how full, I don't think Daemon is capable of being satisfied. I think he's always after the next thing. So he couldn't be the heir, so he stole an egg and declared himself heir. He couldn't be Rhaemyra's paragon, so he then ran off with Laena. Laena couldn't give him a male heir, and died. So then he's gone back to Rhaemyra. He's always after the next fix. I think he's a
very short-term opportunistic sort of approach. He's like figuring out as he goes, basically.
Yeah, I think he plays very much chaotic. So I think, again, I'm so interested to see what happens with Rhaemyra and Daemon as a power couple, because she actually has got some long-term political insight and prophecy goals and that sort of thing. And I think he, as far as I can tell, unless we're mistranslating, is kind of an opportunist reactionary. I think she plans, he reacts.
Yeah, so she could see the long-term and he could play the short-term game.
And whether or not that's a good combo or an awful combo, we'll find out in next episode when all the kids have become older and we'll kill each other, probably.
We'll find out.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of motivations, I think Larys is the one that I'm keeping my eye on. He is scary. Like, he could kill anyone.
He's got like no ties, so he's just like this free person that's just out there that can totally cast the first stone,
because he's already done something,
you know.
What does he want, right? Because he's like Lord of Harrenhal now. That's clearly not his end game, and it's like he was doing fine already. Like, he was born into a decent household, but he doesn't seem to have this desire for family, like, or legacy, or any, like,
he's just a harbinger of chaos, basically.
Well, is it? Yeah, but he's too calculating and methodical. He's too patient.
I'm just looking at the character guide, and he's just like over there by himself, you know.
Does he just want a friend? Is that what it is? Is he just want friends?
I think he's perving on Alicent.
So are you calling it, Jenny? Is that you think he is?
I don't know whether or not his desire for her is necessarily sexual or intimate. I've got the feeling that he will use his power over her, or his, like, I'll be interested to know what payment he demands from her, all of the stuff that he does for her.
He just wants to be useful for something.
He hasn't yet demanded payment. He has done things that he that helps her, even if they horrify her, and if she reveals it to the public, is basically it's a kindness to her, but it's also blackmail material. Yeah. He has a lot over Alicent's head. She is powerful. He is not. He now has climbed the ladder. If he is a Rumpelstiltskin, I want to know what firstborn he's going to demand. Because I don't know whether or not it's going to be specifically for an Alicent, or whether or not he's going to use that to, you know, demand. Like, if we're thinking a Game of Thrones thing, if we're thinking, what's the name of Tyrion's sellsword?
Bronn.
Bronn. If we're thinking Bronn, Bronn goes from nothing to the owner of lands, the king. He gets like a wife, he gets a castle, he gets.
But he also climbing. Talks about his legacy, though. He says he wants to die with his kids fighting over his inheritance. Like, Larys doesn't.
But Larys doesn't necessarily have that expectation, but what does he want and what will he demand?
I mean, he does say, I'll like, be interested love is a burden. What he demands. He says that children are a burden. Now, if you, now you said Rumpelstiltskin, right? There is a possibility that he might ask for Helaena Targaryen's hand in marriage, Alicent's daughter.
I don't know whether or not he'd necessarily go there, but because obviously Helena's already betrothed.
To whom?
To her brother.
To Aemon, right?
Yeah, Helena's betrothed to, to her brother.
Oh, I thought that was a hypothetical they were talking about.
No. She is betrothed.
Oh.
So I don't think it will be necessarily Helena, but I'll be interested to see what he does demand.
I don't know how those kids are going to be healthy.
Yeah, this
oh,
is
Targaryens, funny. You know? the gods flip a coin every time a Targaryen is born. Yeah. I'm surprised there's not... Well, I suppose there is a history of not just failures of the medicine during births, but there is a history of failures of births in Targaryen families, not just the birthing process being hard or dangerous for the mothers or dangerous for the infants, but also in the books, I think there's a lot of examples of Targaryen babies being born scaly and corrupted and like twisted dragons. So that is where not just the psychology of Targaryens is obviously corrupt as all heck. There is the physical side of Targaryens. They can breed, but the children come out wrong.
Mm.
We'll see.
So far, we haven't an example of like any five-toed or web-fingered Targaryens. So, you know.
Mm. Oh, I have one note that I think is mildly interesting. Otto Hightower / Rhysa Fan goes a little bit Welsh at the end.
I didn't know.
He's like, I haven't seen this side of you before.
I believe you.
I was just listening to it, and he's like, "That's what's that? That's Welsh. That's was it?" And he goes, "And now I think you've got the skills to win it." Yeah. <It's> like,
I don't think it's quite that broad.
Okay, but, it's not that much. No, it's very subtle.
I'll have to
subtle.
Rewatch
it's, yeah, go in and it's just it. Like...
Right. Well, you know, it is a show about dragons, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it stands to reason. I just thought a little bit of a Welsh accent sort of slipped out there a little bit.
Cool.
But,
All right.
Yeah, good episode.
We have thoroughly covered this. Should we knock it off before it hits 2 hours?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Beautiful. No, it's fine.
No, it's good. All right. Anyway, thank you for joining us, Jenny, and thank you for catching us all up. You basically, you might as well at this point have just joined us for every episode. It's just we packed you all into this one. Well, and work.
I have no idea when I'll be able to make another one of these, so I wanted to be able to at least catch myself up to this point, and then we'll see.
Well, we can try
send
to find
us some notes. If you can't join, send us some, like, use the chat to send us some voice messages or something. We can listen to them or something.
Yeah.
Okay, totally, we'll do. Totally we'll do. I'll come up with some things.
And, we'll try and find some time if at the end of the series, so we could do a series reflection that.
Ooh, I'll be up there.
Mm. Fantastic. Great. All right. Well, thank you, everyone at home, for joining us. It's a pleasure as always. And we'll see you next week. And goodbye.